So how are you? No, really, how are you? All right. So why am I asking you twice? We all say, hello, how are you? It's just a standard way of greeting each other, and usually we don't want or expect an answer. When someone asks us how we are, what do we say? Oh, yeah, fine. Some sort of nondescript grunt or noise. And heaven help us if people then proceed to tell us how they are. This week has been Mental Health Awareness Week, and so it seemed to me to be an opportune moment to tell you about one church project for which I wear the hat. It's called Open Mind Meaningful Support. Some of you know lots about it already, but as there are quite a few newish members of our congregation, some of you may not know about us or much about us at all. So when people come to see us, we do ask people how they are, and we do usually get an answer. But asking the question twice is something I would like you to consider using in your conversations with people. Asking people twice gives permission, if you like, to really answer that question and permits a deeper and caring dialogue that they may need to have. Can we have the first slide, please, Kathleen? So Open Mind Meaningful Support is a drop-in mental health listening service that this church initiated 18 months prior to the very first lockdown. And it was designed by us to plug the yawning chasm in the provision of any mental health support in this town. Over the years, services has been gradually withdrawn, and to be honest, there are really no services here at all now. And considering that we're the second biggest town in Suffolk, statutory services being withdrawn, we felt that there was a few of us who could actually do something to plug that gap. After about a year of researching different models in the UK, we were gearing up to start when things suddenly escalated. One of our leadership team of the time had chronic and severe PTSD for which she was receiving counselling just across the road in the health centre here. But one day pre-Christmas, we were having a meeting in next door, and she came in absolutely distraught. What had happened was she had gone to her regular counselling session to be told, just bang, sorry, this is the last one, and we're not offering you anymore. That is no way to treat people. So we prayed about it there and then and took a leap of faith and thought, okay, here we go. So the week after Christmas, 1 week later, we opened. And people came. Lots of people came. More men than women came, which was a huge surprise, really good surprise. We had enough volunteers, and each week we had enough that everyone who came could have one-to-one time with that person to talk about whatever they wanted to talk about. We didn't always get it right. It was a steep learning curve. On the whole, we just listened to people, but over time we started to implement additional things like worksheets for our guests to take home and study and come back and talk about it the following week. And we could also refer to other organisations. Over time, we did build up good relationships with other voluntary and statutory services, but it was clear that the NHS was never actually going to be able to fund any significant mental health services in Haverhill, and that remains true today. Of course, we had to close during the pandemic, and by the time we could reopen, several of the original team had decided that they were not able to re-engage for all sorts of reasons. And to be honest, it looked like we were in a position that we were not going to be able to reopen. On a very personal level, I was too drained from my own circumstances personally to start the whole recruitment process again. And to be honest, I thought, oh, I just can't do this. And then God intervened as he does. One night in my prayers, I just whispered into the dark, I can't do this again. And if you want me to, then I need a message from you. I had nothing to offer. And isn't that always the way things happen? Suddenly, everything changed. And I'm just going to warn you, the next couple of sentences might be upsetting, they might be triggering, so please be prepared. There was a truly dreadful couple of events when, in the space of just one day, the police had had to close the Ratting Road twice as young people were trying to jump from the bridge beside Tesco. Two young people had attempted to take their own lives within 12 hours. That's utterly appalling. How absolutely appalling that it had come to this. That the only way young people could get any help at all was by attempting to take their own lives. Thankfully, both were taken to a place of safety, but the incidents has caused an absolute furore in the media, as you can imagine. Quite rightly, the public were incensed. Hundreds of people were commenting on a Facebook conversation about it. Then our Natalie, I can see her in the back there, posted about the existence of a very small community project called Open Mind. And suddenly people were contacting me offering to help. Within days, eight people had applied to join us, two of whom were successful. So off we went. And we now have a team of 12. Everyone is offered training. If we could have the mugshots up now, please. These are my lovely people. Everyone is trained to listen well, and several have now completed the Mental Health Foundation Mental Health First Aid training program and the suicide prevention program. Another worry that I had at the time was that small space in next door meant keeping confidentiality quite difficult. But out of the blue, again, random, thank you God, a space became available in the hall on a Wednesday morning, which very rarely happens, so we grabbed that. So we've been running since November every Wednesday, and sometimes it's quiet, sometimes it certainly is not. We aim to have 5 volunteers each week, and much of the time we're really kept very busy. And looking after our guests, they all get offered refreshments and time to talk. Most of the time, people come for just a few sessions, find what they need and move on. Some dip in and dip out as they need to, and some come most weeks. We've got an absolutely fabulous bunch of people, 12 beautiful people, in fact, but as is always the case, some will need to leave. Natalie will be moving away after she and Jack marry. How rude, you can't do that. And Gregor will be leaving to begin his training as an Anglican priest in July. We're always going to be open to new volunteers coming forward, so I'd just like to just pop that thought into your heads right now. It may not be the right time for you, but just lodge it there. You don't need any qualification in mental health work or psychiatry, but you do really need a compassionate and gentle heart and a willingness to learn. We do offer training and a rota, and you can just fit in the rota whenever you need. You don't need to come every week. A critical quality is a sense of humour. It will come in very handy, as we'd always find time to let our hair down, put it like that. And although we do hear about some difficult things, it isn't actually a sad place at all. Quite opposite. If you want to know about a little bit more about Open Mind, please do come and chat with me after today or any other time. I've left our business card out on the chairs, which you've probably seen. You may not have noticed that on the reverse side are helpline numbers. Why don't you take them, put them in your purse, your wallet? It may be that one day you think, you know what, this person needs this, and then you've got it, you can give it to them. We're really grateful for our team and for the many blessings God has given us, and we would really appreciate your continuing prayers of hope and healing for all our guests and volunteers who really do work hard for this service. Thank you for that. Now, moving into the heart of the message for today, how many people feel and believe that we have been living in really dark and troubled times? And that's probably true. A consequence of such severe and protracted periods of dark times is the rolling tide of mental health problems that afflict so many. Mental health problems have never been so obvious, so well documented, so public, and so under-resourced. And I know that for many, it seems overwhelming and without any obvious solution. But it does not need to be that way. There is no need to feel overwhelmed, and I'm going to tell you why. Next image, please, Kathy, Julia. Now, I have for several years and bored some of my friends senseless because I'm a closet fan of the medieval Christian anchoress called Julianne of Norwich. For many years, I thought it was a bloke because it was Julian, but no, it's a woman. So she's a relatively local female theologian who carved a new way of interpreting the Bible, which revolutionized our perception of who Christ is. Her writings, now known as Revelations of Divine Love, are the earliest surviving English language works by a woman. If you haven't come across her so far, I'll give you a little bit of an introduction. She was born in 1343 in Norwich, and little of her early life is known, which is no surprise. At that time, the Black Death was sweeping the nation, and it is thought that half of Norwich was absolutely wiped out. Peasants' revolt was in full swing, as was the suppression of the Lollards. It is thought that she was married at some point and had a child, but she lost them to the Black Death. So it was a really turbulent time to be alive. When she was 30, she contracted the Black Death's bleed, and it was thought that she was going to succumb. On her deathbed, the priest was summoned to give her the last rites. She began to lose her sight. She began to feel physically numb. She's documented this. But gazing on the crucifix, she saw the figure of Jesus begin to bleed. She then received a series of visions of Christ. Over the next few hours, she had 15 visions of Jesus, and on the following night, a further one. She miraculously recovered from her illness, and she wrote two versions of her experience. The early one was completed fairly swiftly after her infection, and a much longer one today is called The Long Text, and that was written decades later. So her original manuscript doesn't exist. It no longer exists. But a copy known as The Short Text survived. Decades later, she began to explore these revelations from a theological standpoint. Now, these readings and her interpretations were suppressed. They were kept secret and by women because they would very likely have been destroyed during the Reformation. Pretty much disappeared from view until 1901. When a manuscript in the British Museum was translated, and there have been loads of translations since. Now, Julianne, is today considered to be a really important Christian mystic and theologian. And she's celebrated in the Christian and secular worlds for her profound writings, now known as the Revelations of Divine Love. In fact, they're the earliest surviving English language works by a woman. Following these visions, she chose to become an anchoress. This wasn't particularly an unusual thing to do at the time, but it meant that she agreed, she volunteered, she wanted to be walled into the walls of a church, never to leave. The fact that she's called Julianne is probably because she was walled into the church, St. Julian in Norwich. The reason for doing that was she chose to pray constantly and be a source of wisdom to the community. They could actually speak to her, and I went there last year to visit with Sonia, and okay, it's rebuilt, but it's in the style of, there is like a window at the top through which she could speak and be a source of wisdom for the passing members of the Norwich community. So what made her writing so remarkable? Why are so many people, including myself, across the globe, completely entranced and heartened by her visions and her interpretations, including all the major Christian churches? Well, there are several reasons, including her interpretation of God as a mother, as well as a father, but that's not what I want to talk about today. No, it was just one particular vision. Next, please, Kathy. In it, Jesus said to her the famous words, "All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well." This sounds implausible, right? How could it possibly be well? The Black Plague, civil, political, and religious unrest, plus the near-death experience. How could it possibly be well? So, and this is what she replied. "Oh, good Lord, how could all things be well? Because of the great harm which has come through sin to your creatures." Okay, slightly different language, but it does sound like the sort of thing that we might say today. She had first-hand experience of living in a global pandemic. She knew about loss, loneliness, and self-isolation, and she was not afraid to ask Jesus the sort of question so we might ask him today. "Oh, Jesus, how can everything possibly be good? Look at the mess we've made of your world and everything in it." Next slide, Kathy, please. And this is what Jesus replied. He said, "Thou shalt not be tempested. Thou shalt not be travailed. Thou shalt not be distressed." He said, "Thou shalt not be overcome. And all shall be well. And all shall be well. And all manner of things shall be well." You won't be caught up in the storm. You will not be overcome by hard times. You will not be distressed. You will not be overcome. So, despite her own significant life difficulties, Jesus was able to be a beacon of great hope and encouragement in her writings and to the people of the day. I'd like to suggest that it was her ability to tune in with God, to get in step with God, to see God as a loving and generous parent, and to be able to witness what God was doing and how his kingdom was moving forward in spite of her less than ideal life circumstances. So how can we daily live in a life-affirming and positive way when all around us appears to be catastrophe? Gillian's sense of well-being came from a truly knowing bells and whistles that God is pure love. And it is from that firm ground that we too can develop our own sense of wellness. It's from that firm foundation that actions can be reliably delivered that can transform the world we live in. Next slide, please, Kathy. Which takes me back to the beginning of today's talk. I asked you, how are you? Twice. How can we adopt Julianne's positive belief, her positive mental attitude, and use it to become an agent for change? How can we positively affect change when we see or experience for ourselves poor mental health? And in fact, that's increasingly the case, isn't it? When it's obvious to us all that the NHS can't provide, it can't. The answer is remarkably simple. How can I, you, we, really make a positive difference to the increasing numbers of those experiencing anxieties and depression? I'm going to recommend how. It's by helping just one person at a time. For that's what Jesus did. He went to the one. He stopped for the one. He touched the one. He healed the one. He knew the name of one. He said, I see you. I see you. God's kingdom works one at a time. The lost coin, the lost son, the lost sheep. It's the nature of God himself. I think that a lot of us want a changed future, but for so many reasons, don't want to change anything ourselves because we think we can't, or it's not our job. It's the job of, I don't know, politicians or local government or the police or the ambulance service, schools. But I wonder what you think of this quote from Catherine Booth, who co-founded the Salvation Army. There is no changing the future without disturbing the present. I'm going to read that again. There is no changing the future without disturbing the present. We say we can't change anything because we're overwhelmed by it all. And I say, yes, that's right. That is the right response. I am overwhelmed. We're all overwhelmed. Jesus was overwhelmed and he cried openly about it. And then the question becomes a quiet one. What can I do? What can I do to help? And here's the answer. We take one step, just one step forward, hand outstretched. We're always going to be tempted to stick our heads in the sand, put our fingers in our ears and do the colloquial la 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 la, to shut our eyes. But when did that ever change anything? Can I ask you then, this week, to consider challenging yourself? Lean in to any unease you might have about mental health subjects. And do some research for yourself. Equip yourself with some facts to bust those myths. Lean more into the issue and let it get into your heart. Being informed often takes away a lot of fear and the paralysis that holds us back. So I'm going to set you a challenge for today as I wrap this up. I want to encourage you to be more like Julianne of Norwich. Be a light of positivity. Be assured that God is love. Be educated about what matters. And finally, remember that when we ask someone how they are, we ask them twice. Amen.